You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dante, if I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give the information, asking for the wood plug makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number three, everybody, and this is Dave Hodges, your host. Also flying co-pilot with me is Katie Whalen, our health reporter, who will have her own revelation at the bottom of the hour, and you're not going to want to miss this, and it's something that we're going to need everyone's help on. Some of you already know what I'm talking about. If you don't, we'll give you full disclosure. But right now, you heard me say in the last hour, I'm proud to be an American, but with the way that our federal government is going, I'm ashamed to be an American at the same time. As I see these events unfolding, I don't even recognize this country anymore. It's certainly not the country I grew up in. It's certainly not the country that I want my son and his generation to grow up in. It's just heinous. What we have, the word is heinous abuse of authority. And we have on an incredibly brave person who's going to, we're going to walk through the events that happened at the, what I call the execution of Lavoy Finicum, a man who was exercising his First Amendment rights, his right to assemble. They had not posed a threat to any individual, and we saw on tape the execution of an unarmed man. Well, Shauna, thanks for joining us, and I know this is a very difficult time for you. I can imagine you're not sleeping very well, and I would imagine, you know, the meals aren't going down as good as they normally do. So I wanted you to know from that perspective, I so appreciate your courage, but your conviction to the truth to come on this show and set our listening audience straight about what happened.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate we have the opportunity to tell the truth, because I see in the media there's a lot of falsehoods that are going out, and we have to speak up and tell what really happened so that they will know what really went down.
Well, let's start with that morning. You guys were taking a trip. Ammon and his brother and Lavoy, you and so forth, and Victoria, and a gentleman named Mark McConnell. You were all taking a trip to go to John Day. What was the purpose of your trip?
That morning, we had our meeting, and the trip was set up. There was a meeting in John Day that evening with the sheriff of Grant County. And he had called in a bunch of ranchers. I don't know if he called them or they, anyway, they had a big bunch of ranchers, because the sheriff over there is very constitutional and has worked well and really in support of the Constitution. And they wanted to hear the presentation that Ammon Bundy gives and Ryan Payne and Ryan Bundy about personal rights, about our rights and how they're created and how they're protected by the Constitution itself and what the Constitution is about. And they've been out teaching many ranchers and other citizens in Harney County. They would come down there and learn these things, and then they would, it was awesome. And they had this meeting set up for that evening, and a couple of days before that we had a wonderful family show up. It's the Sharp family, and we had heard them sing before. It's a mother. She has 10 children, and they sing gospel music. And the Lord brought them here. The Lord brought them, and they fill your heart with so much peace and comfort, and that's why they came. So they we decided, or they decided, that that's what they were going to do, is have them come because they wanted to sing. They had been there singing for us for a few days, and the day before, their oldest daughter just came from EMT school. She finished and joined them. So the whole program was going to go that they were going to put this performance on at that meeting in John Day. Well, normally I don't go to the meetings. I have other things I was doing, working on, but the guys were all getting ready to go, and they had planned it out where everybody was going at separate times in separate individual cars. And at that time, we were going to send the family and some others ahead and get prepared. And as they were getting into their car, their van to drive, they had everybody in except the oldest daughter because she was still getting ready. And they needed to take off, so we said, okay, go ahead and go. Then we were going to come. Well, I was originally not going, but LaVoy was driving his truck, and Ryan Payne was in the passenger side. Ryan Bundy was in the back, and they were taking Victoria, this daughter, the 18-year-old. And we had another person that was supposed to be going to film it, to video it, but we couldn't find him at the last minute. And so I said, okay, I will go and do that. And then, because I was preparing to go home, I said, I will go and do that, and then see, I was going to go home afterwards. So I jumped in the truck on behind the passenger seat, and we headed out for John Day. When we had traveled for about a half an hour, and behind us was supposed to come in about 15 minutes or so, was going to be the second vehicle, which had Mark McConnell in. He was driving, and Buddha and Ammon Bundy. Anyway, they were in a different vehicle, and they were supposed to be coming behind us. And then we had a reporter that was supposed to be coming 10 minutes behind that. And so we headed out. We traveled for probably, I'm guessing, around a half an hour. During that time, I was busy on the phone. I was calling people in John Day, some of our friends, saying, you ought to come and see the concert. You know, it's going to be really... it's going to be really interesting, and you'll really love it. I wanted them to be able to hear what was happening and to understand. And then I also had some of the guys' families, like the LaVoy's wife was calling, you know, and I was texting, saying this is great. His daughter was playing a basketball game, and she wanted to be there, but they had, you know, she's at high school. Anyway, I was in communication with a lot of people at that time. We'd traveled for about a half an hour, and we're going through the hills. Now, I don't know how far it is, and I don't even know which direction we're going, because I do not geographically know Oregon. Not from here, wasn't familiar. And we got to this Snowed Valley, and they said, and I looked up, and they said, oh, look at all those vehicles that were coming out of the side canyon. There were a whole bunch of them up into this snowed-in valley off the side road. And they started to filing out and falling in behind the Jeep. And at that time, I think, is when LaVoy and Ryan realized that it was going to be an ambush, that it was a setup. And they got a little bit nervous because as they came out, they came up on quickly and flipped on their lights. All I could see was flashing lights. As they were, you know, and they were starting to pull over the Jeep, because I could see in the rearview mirror that the Jeep was slowing down. So I turned around and I could see that they were kind of coming up on top of the Jeep, and the Jeep stopped, and we kept going, because LaVoy said, we have to get to John Day, and we have to, because we're meeting the sheriff, we've got to get to John Day. So he was speeding up. And then the cars, the police cars, or whoever they were, I don't know because I couldn't see them exactly, other than they were different colored vehicles at the time, like SUVs. Anyway, they start. I could just see the lights coming up quickly upon us. And Ryan Payne says, "Lavoie, you need to pull over. Just pull over." And Lavoie said, "No, we got to go see the sheriff." And finally, Ryan Payne said, "You got to pull over. You got to stop. You know." And so Lavoie slowed down and stopped. And Ryan Payne rolled down the window. Now he's in the passenger side. And he puts both his arms out the window and puts it, you know, to show, I guess, that he didn't have any weapons or whatever, but he puts his hands out and he starts to put his head out and a bullet comes by and I thought it hit him in the arm. He jumps back really fast into the car, I mean his hands, and it hits, I thought it hit the bracelet on his arm, but it didn't. It hit the metal between the mirror and the door. And that freaked us out. And he
so
goes, they're shooting.
While you were stopped, they didn't give you an opportunity to surrender. They didn't get on their PA system and said, okay,
this
we're going to order you out of the car.
Anything.
So
yeah.
The first thing they did was to shoot at you.
Shoot at him. Yep, shoot at Ryan's hands. And so that freaked us out. And then Lavoie was going to take off. And Ryan said, no, they're in business. We better stop. You know, just wait. And so he gets out and he's yelling at him. There's women in the car, so he jumps out of the car. And he's standing there, and he yells back at whoever's behind us, and he says, "There's women in the car." And we hear them say, "If the women want out, let them out, or let the women out." Well, my door was locked, and Victoria was sitting next to me, and she's just a young girl, just barely 18. And she's freaked out. Well, I'm kind of freaked out, too, because they're shooting already, and we haven't even done any of it, you know. And that was really weird. And then I can look up, and I looked up, and on the top of Lavoie's hat, there is a red laser pointed to the top of his head, because I can see him in the back seat. And he saw that, because it was like flashing around, you know, around, and we could see it on his head. And he stuck his hand out and his head out, and he yells, "We're going to see the sheriff. We are going to John Day to meet with the sheriff." And he said, "Go ahead, shoot me then," because he could see the laser on his head in the mirror. And then he said that 3 or 4 times. "We're going to see the sheriff." And then he said to us, "If you want to get out, get out." And Victoria says, "I'm not getting out." And my mother instinct kicks in, and I said, "I'm not leaving her. I'm not getting out." So he says, "Okay." And so he just decided to gun it, and we just slid down the floorboard. I was still sitting up. There wasn't really enough room for us. I'll slide down there. But Victoria leaned over on me, and Ryan was down, and we took off. And we tried at that moment to dial out 911, anybody we knew, trying to call. We had nobody. None of us had any service. Suddenly the service was all gone, like they already knew.
Sure.
They either shut it off or knew that spot had absolutely no service. Because we couldn't call one single anything. We had no service. And I had just barely been on the phone, so I knew that it had just cut off. So I immediately grabbed my camera that I had, because Ryan turned on his phone and he's talking into his phone saying what's going on, I don't know if he's videoing or exactly how he's doing it, but he's recording what's happening. And I am, And I'm down as low as I can get, and I've got the camera up, and it's on Lavoie, and I said to him, "How far do you think we can get before they shoot the tires out? How far do we have to go?" And he said, "We have to go 50 miles." Oh, my heart sunk. I'm going, "Oh my gosh, we're going to make 50 miles, and they're gaining on us, and they're coming up around the side of us," and he's going for it, and, suddenly, we hit some, because we're down, I guess we came around the corner. I'm not really sure, but all I know is all of a sudden the truck hits this slush. And I don't know if he hit the brakes or if he was just swerving exactly, but this big spray of snow and ice came up to the side over on the right side of us, and he swerves over to the left, and then now he's going over into the snowbank. At that point, I could see the vehicles barricading across the road, and he's right. trying to go around, and we get stuck.
So he was going to go around the two vehicles there, and he got stuck in
the
snowbank.
That were in the road.
And so let's talk about what happened then and when Lavoie decided to exit the vehicle.
Well, at that point, as soon as that vehicle stopped, okay, he flung open the door, and he jumped out of the vehicle, and the snow was deep, and he throws his hands wide open, and he runs. Well, he's trying to. How do you run through snow, waist deep? Anyway, he's trying to get through the snow, and he's got his hands out, and he's yelling, "Just shoot me then. Just shoot me. Shoot me. Just shoot me then." And I could not understand why he was doing that. And since that day, I have come to understand a little bit more that he, because I can't do his thinking for him, but he has a number of daughters. And I really believe that he had intention to draw the fire away from us because they had lasers all over the place and started shooting.
Did you have lasers on your body?
Absolutely. They had lasers all over us, and we were freaking out because they were shooting the truck. He was out there. We couldn't do anything. We got pinned down.
Let me stop you for a second, Shauna. Let me stop you just for a second.
Yeah.
Are you saying at the point he got out of the vehicle, they were already firing upon the vehicle?
They started firing immediately upon the vehicle.
When the vehicle came to a stop, when you came to a stop in that snowbank, is that when they started to fire again?
I think he jumped out first, and then they began to fire.
Okay.
I think he hit the snow before they actually started firing, but that's when we had to get, we couldn't get up because we were getting blasted with bullets, and lasers were every place in the car, and they were shooting everything, and the windows went out, and the passenger window got blown out, and his door was still open, and Victoria and Ryan. Now I couldn't see him after he left my camera because I'm panning over there, but I'm down low and they're kind of in front of me, so I can't see it as well. But Victoria would get up and I'd say, "Oh, get down," and she was trying to see him, and she said, "They shot him," and Ryan said, "They shot him," and they shot him again, and Ryan says, "He's dead," but the bullets never stopped. They kept coming. They kept shooting the vehicle. We were pinned. We couldn't get up. It was like we were not supposed to get out of that.
How long did they keep shooting at you?
The windows blasted out. I'm sitting there next to that passenger window down. We're praying. We're praying as hard as we can to protect us, to save us. I'm looking up at the window next to my head, and there are bullets or whatever they hit. Five times they hit that window and it never broke. I don't know if it was because the angle or I praise the Lord because I say he was protecting us because we were praying so hard to save us. And
Shauna, how many times
lasers,
let me ask you, how many times do you think they shot at the vehicle if you were to guess, and how long did this assault go on after Lavoie was shot?
Oh, hundreds of bullets, hundreds. They didn't stop. I mean, there was a laser on her knee, and I'd grab her knee and move it. There was that one on his hat, and we'd push her. We were just dodging the lasers. And it just kept shooting, and then they started shooting some weird things in that were sending smoke. And they burned our eyes and our nose and our faces, and so they were... Anyway, it was awful. We just... So it went on for, I'd say, I don't know if it's 5-10 minutes. I don't know how long it was. I mean, in that situation, I can't tell time. The only way I could tell you is if you had my camera and you could see how long I was videoing. That's all I can tell you.
Well, how did they eventually, how did the shooting stop and then they took you into custody? Let's talk about that.
Well, Victoria had just finished EMT school 2 days before that. And she was screaming out the window, "Let me help him, let me help him." But see, they didn't answer when she did that. And then she really was upset because they killed him. And she says, "Let me cover his body. I'm an EMT. I'm an EMT." And she was screaming. And then after we'd had enough of this, it was definitely that they had no intention to let us out of there. So we started screaming together. She was screaming, "Stop, stop." And I was really upset. And I said, "Stop it right now. Just stop." And finally they heard us, I guess. I have no idea why they stopped. But I'm telling you that they stopped, and then they said, "Send the man out." And at that time, Ryan said, "I've been hit in the shoulder." And we looked, and sure enough, he had been hit in the right shoulder, and he was bleeding. And Victoria wanted to take care of it, but they were saying, "Get out of the car." So he came out with his hands up and had to back out, and they took him. And then they tell the next one to get out, so she gets out with her hands up, and of course they arrested her, or took her, and then I came out. I had to drop my camera and my phone and all my notebooks, and I came out with my hands up, and because the truck's kind of a slant, so we all came out the same back door. And as I got out, I was right behind Victoria, and I noticed that the truck tire was still spinning in the snow. So it was still spinning, and we look over there, and there's Lavoy laying dead on the snow. Now, what was really odd with that was because he went out facing them, and when we saw him, his back, he was laying with his back down and his face up, which didn't make sense. And his left hand was still out, and his right hand was kind of just leaned up by his chest. And his knees were still buried in the snow. And until I saw the FBI video yesterday, it made no sense to me. Why would he be facing up like that? He was obviously dead. His hat was still on. He had his glasses on. I don't understand how he was in that position. But as we were walking, we also saw all these men coming out from behind the trees. There were all these men had rifles and hats on, had like little binoculars on them. They were all behind all these trees that were facing him, facing us. And I would say, and in my guess, I would guess about 24 of them maybe. I'm guessing, but there was a number of them. And then we went back, and they took us over and set us on the road and put handcuffs on us. And then as I was coming out with my hands up, they yelled at me and said, "Who else is in the vehicle?" I said, "No one. Nobody else is in the vehicle." They asked me that 3 or 4 times. "Nobody. I'm the last one. There's nobody in there." As soon as they got me to the road and put the cuffs on me, they opened fire and started riddling that truck again. Just riddling the truck with bullets. And
trying
to
kill anyone that might be behind, yeah.
I guess. I don't know, but they just riddled it, and they broke the window that I was sitting next to. You know, so now that window's blown out. But they had, up to that time, they hadn't broken that window, but now it was totally, they just opened fire on that truck.
Shauna, we're running kind of short on time, so let me move this ahead.
Okay, sorry.
You have an appearance tomorrow, don't you?
No,
and I don't want
I have
you
to go back and see the attorney. We're going
attorney, okay.
back to the court because when I was released, they did not give me the terms and conditions or whatever. They gave me nothing. I didn't
yeah,
sign.
That's
anything.
Where I was going with this.
I didn't know anything. They just kicked
they
me
could
out.
End up telling you that you're gag ordered and you can't speak to the media anymore. Correct?
I'm sure they're going to say that to me.
Yes.
Well, I'm not sure. I don't even know because they didn't tell me anything, so I didn't know. Other
okay.
than here's one thing they did tell me. They did tell me that I had to get all the guns. They called my husband and said I had to have all the guns out of our house if I came home, and that they had to go somewhere else. So that day, my husband had taken them to my daughter's house and put them in their big office, their shed, their building they have there, construction building. And my son-in-law was in that building that night working on his backhoe, and he fell asleep in the chair by the wood stove. And for some reason, after the family went up to the house, I and with the little children, my daughter and the little kids, somehow that thing caught on fire and exploded and burned down the whole shop with her husband in it. And she got there, and all my guns and bullets were blown. It was awful. It was awful. She couldn't get in the building. So now he's killed. I'm trying to get home. They call me back and say, you got to get back here. They didn't put this ankle bracelet or something they were supposed to put on you. They didn't do it. And I was torn in half. I was 3 hours out and had to come back. And I couldn't get to my family. I'm really distraught because I can't do it until in the morning. So in the morning, I have to go back there, and they're going to give me terms and conditions and whatever. I don't know.
Let me ask you a real pointed question here. Did anyone inside the vehicle, or did Lavoie do anything to warrant being shot at?
What do you mean by that? Did he do anything?
In other words, from the law enforcement perspective, they're going to come out with, they're going to spin the narrative, as you know. Okay?
From
your perspective, did Lavoie deserve to be shot? Did he act in a threatening manner?
Absolutely not.
All right.
He
wanted to get that on the record.
Nothing. Yeah.
Okay. And at the first traffic stop, the first roadblock, you were fired upon without provocation, correct?
Absolutely.
This is Nazi Germany, and you had an encounter with the Gestapo. This is how I see it. When people aren't offering resistance, what they should have done, you wouldn't believe all the law enforcement agencies I've had write to me. I'm getting my own voice back in my ear. But we have, I've had law enforcement agents write to me, Shauna, and they're telling me that they should have moved immediately upon Lavoie's body to see if he was alive, and by putting cover on the car, so if no one was doing anything, you don't shoot. And they said that they should have checked him to see if he was still alive, to give him medical assistance. They didn't do that. They acted with complete depraved indifference towards Lavoie. And then the way they've handled you guys. First of all, Victoria wasn't even part of the actions of Ammon Bundy and what was trying to be accomplished there by educating the ranchers. And yet they could have killed her. They could have killed an innocent person without even giving them the right to give up. That's the thing. They never gave you an opportunity to surrender until after Lavoie was dead. Am I right?
Right. And even then,
horrible.
They weren't
going to. Horrible. Just horrible. And to Todd, we're going to skip this last break, and we'll go right into Katie's segment here when we're done with Shauna. But this is, I said this last hour. This makes me ashamed to be an American, that we could act with such depraved indifference.
Don't ever be ashamed to be an American. We have to make a difference.
I agree. We do need to make a difference, and I'm glad to hear you say that. Well, listen, I'm so glad that you came on the show with us, Shauna. I speak for my listening audience and for Katie. We so respect you and your courage for coming on.
I appreciate this was a man who was killed in cold blood. That's all I can tell you.
I agree.
We should pray for those people. We should pray for the people who did it. And we need to pray for the family, because this is God's country. He created the Constitution for us, and we have to realize that it's in His hands. And we must pray. As a nation, we have to pray.
This, you embody the spirit that makes me proud to be an American. And the FBI in this instance, it's beyond words. Shauna, God bless you. I wish you complete justice in the courts. I know they've charged you with impeding federal officers. Of course, they had to make up some bogus nonsense. I've read the charge. It doesn't even make sense. But I wish you the best. Yeah. Our listening audience is going to pray for you, that you all are set free and justice be done, and the murderers of Lavoie are brought to justice. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
We will follow this carefully. And again, thanks to Katie for making this interview possible. Okay. Well, Katie, can you come on in?
I'm here, Dave. Oh, my goodness.
You know, you are fantastic at putting together interviews and stories with such brave people like Shauna, but you're causing me to lose sleep.
Well, sometimes it's justified to lose sleep, because in the big picture, we've got to get to the bottom of this.
I think we got to the bottom. You can hear the sincerity in Shauna's voice. You can hear it. It permeates through the airwaves, you know she's telling the truth, and besides, the video confirms what she's saying.
Yeah, and I will tell you, Shauna is the real deal. I've met Shauna. I know her sister. I've known her sister for years. Shauna's the real deal. What you hear is what you hear. God-fearing. These were God-fearing people trying to educate the public on their God-given rights, constitutional rights, and they were shot at. I called it a canned hunt. A canned hunt. Remember canned hunts? And, you know, they take hunters to Africa and they put animals in these small cages and then hunters line up and just whack them all. That's what this was, only they were humans. This is disgusting, Dave.
I just, sometimes dead air is good so people can collect their thoughts. But I would really encourage everyone in the listening audience to keep Shauna and Ammon and of course, Lavoie's family and all the rest that were there in their prayers. Please pray for justice with these people, because what I fear is going to happen is what happened at Waco. After they butchered those people by running the tanks to the walls and burned women and children to death, when they put the survivors, I think there were 12 of them, if memory serves me correctly, but when they put the 12 survivors on trial, they weren't allowed to speak to the media. They couldn't give any statements. So this is why it was really important that we had Shauna on tonight. Mm-hmm. And this archive is going to go far and wide. I promise you, as God gives me the strength, as many people are going to hear this as I can possibly make happen, because the only way that we can correct living in Nazi Germany is to identify the Gestapo and put them all in jail.
I don't think this is going to be a Waco. It's a different day. There's a different media. There's a different spirit. People are experiencing firsthand what's happening. They're seeing it, feeling it. This isn't Waco. This could turn the corner. I don't know how it's going to end, but I am just grateful we're getting the information out as much as we can. So that's pretty much what I have to say about that.
We have to change gears here because we have another serious issue we've got to contend with. Folks, you know, Katie joined me. Gosh, Katie, I don't remember. It's almost been a year, hasn't it?
That's been a year this month. It's our anniversary.
Well, this is a good anniversary, and as people know who listen to the show regularly, Katie's segment is invaluable, and she contributes to the show in many other ways than just her health segment, such as basically getting the interview with Ammon Bundy, and then, of course, securing the interview with Shauna Cox with her sources. So she certainly services the show in many ways. Now it's time for our show to service her. Katie, I'm going to let you tell the story, and I'll ask questions as appropriate.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Where do I even begin? My goodness. First thing I want to say is everyone who's been following the health segment, I love all of you. The feedback I'm getting just from the information that's come out, and I haven't even released the information, is amazing. But in a nutshell, this segment has stretched me. You know, when Dave first approached me with the health segment, I've always been into God's medicine and doing things the natural way, and so this stretched me. It forced me to go out and learn even more than I could have ever learned. And over the months, you know, I try and encourage people to take care of themselves, and it's always a good idea no matter what happens. And I do take good care of myself. I mean, I work out, I drink clean water, I eat non-GMO foods. I do the best I can. And I am healthy. But sometimes things happen to people. And there, I believe what I'm learning is there are reasons. And on December 30th, I was officially diagnosed with malignant breast cancer. So my message is, these things can happen to anyone and everyone, but please don't lose heart. As healthy as you are, don't lose heart. And that's what I am not doing. I'm not losing heart. Early in November, I went in and had an ultrasound because I felt something that was a little unusual for me. And sure enough, the ultrasound showed something they called a highly suspicious malignancy. And as the weeks progressed, I didn't really want to do the traditional route, so I took a deep breath, Dave. I sat back and I took a deep breath and I prayed and I didn't rush into anything. And I literally waited weeks. And so I eventually went in and spoke with a surgeon, and really the best course of action to find out what it was, because I'd done shows on needle biopsies, and some of the studies are questionable about needle biopsies and how when you pull the cells from a needle biopsy, there's about a 50% chance of it spreading to the sentinel node. Now, that's from the John Wayne Cancer Institute. It's debatable, but that was my choice. So I went in and I had a lumpectomy. And when they took it out, it was about a 3-inch long area of tissue, about 2 inches wide, about 1.5 inches wide, 2 inches thick. And 5 of the 6 margins were positive, which means they didn't get it all. And it's the kind of cancer that snakes around through the tissue. So they can't just go in and pull out a chunk here and a chunk there and call it a day. I did not want to do any of the traditional. In my mind, I didn't want to do any traditional modalities. And so I went in with that mindset, but open-minded. So I began to learn about the particular kind of cancer and studied it and, again, prayed, took a deep breath. It was very shocking. The first, actually from the very first ultrasound, I remember I walked out of the imaging center not knowing anything except that I had a negative ultrasound, and just sat in the car and was quiet. And I was saying this on the other interview I did at Hagman's. Not only did I get bad news, but I went to start my car to drive home so I could be alone with myself, and my car wouldn't start. So it was just a really bad day all in all. But I remember just looking up and taking a breath and saying, all right, Lord, what is this? What is this about? You know, what's going on? And, you know, I have good days and bad days, but overall I have such love and support, and I have tremendous faith, and I have an incredible knowledge bank. And that's what I want to impart on people, is the more you learn about the body, the human body, about how God designed us, about disease, about the industry that we are thrown into when we have a diagnosis, please, everyone, really look into and study. Use the internet as much as you possibly can. Talk to experts. Talk to holistic doctors. I have holistic doctors. I have naturopaths. I have traditional or modern doctors. My surgeon is not holistic at all, and she's a wonderful surgeon. I was blessed to have the head of the surgery department work with me on this. So I'm using all my resources. And the first thing I did when I found out about it was talk to nutritional experts and got feedback and learned. And, you know, I talked to Ted Brower and kind of picked his brain for immunity, vitamins and nutrients and different things that are great to boost the immune system. Because one thing I've learned, Dave, is from all the videos I've been watching and oh my goodness, the best site, Jonathan Landsman. I got so much information. Jonathan Landsman has a site called Health News 365. And what he's done over the years is interview doctors. And he has a library of recordings of integrative doctors, cancer doctors, naturopaths, medical doctors. And you can learn so much if you go there and you study this. So I learned as much as I could. And immediately got on a good nutritional, immune-boosting diet of juicing. I'm juicing. I am eating pretty much macrobiotic, but not completely. No sugars. The only grains, the only carbs I'm eating, because I don't want to go into ketosis, but I am eating grains. I'm eating amaranth and quinoa and things like that. But no sugars, no breads, no pastas. Just cut all that out. Lean meats, not very much meat. But So I'm basically cutting off the sugar supply as much as I can. But I'm also doing an incredible protocol. I'm doing pawpaw, bloodroot. I'm doing vitamin C injections, which was recommended to me. Vitamin C injections, 40, 50,000 milligrams twice a week. I'm going to go every other day now. If the listening audience looks into vitamins, I did a show actually about three, four weeks ago on it, and how beneficial it is. It literally goes in and gobbles up pathogens and takes care of, it's wonderful for inflammation. So I'm doing 12,000 milligrams of curcumin, D3, K2, potassium iodide. I'm doing THC. I am in a marijuana, medical marijuana state, so I'm doing 50 milligrams of pretty high-powered medical-grade THC at night and 50 milligrams of CBD during the day. I'm praying. I'm keeping my body fit. I'm working on my mind. High-dose E and selenium. I'm using my essential oils, frankincense, lemongrass, rosemary, orange. These are all anti-cancer oils. So I am basically throwing everything at it but the kitchen sink, and I've debated maybe even throwing that at it. But it's become very manageable. It sounds like a lot, but it's changing me. And my message is, God is so amazing because he gave me... I look at this as an opportunity, Dave. I'm not looking at this as a death sentence, which you hear cancer, oh my gosh, oh, you poor thing. I was lucky enough to catch it fairly early. It's a stage one, grade one, 2% aggression rate. It can change at any time. But I'm still going to do everything I can naturally. So...
Well, Katie, this could be your finest hour. Let me tell you what, last night, and I think there are no accidents. I thought about you late last night. I was up doing some work, show prep and so forth, and Apollo 13 was on. And I watched the last half of it. And I remember Shorty Powers, they thought they were going to lose the astronauts in reentry. And Gene Cernan said, this is going to be a catastrophe. And he says, no, quite the contrary. This could be our finest hour. So I agree with you. I think you've been presented with an opportunity. And I think that your battle here is going to be a testimony for the listening audience as they're faced with their maladies that come to all of us. Because surely, you know, we will be challenged and ultimately we will fall. All of us will. But on that battleground, when we fight to stay alive, I think that your courage and your protocols are going to become noteworthy and a blueprint for thousands of people that listen to the show to follow.
You know, Dave, I really hope so, and that's the first thing. One of the first things I thought about is, oh my gosh, I'm the health chick. How could this happen to me? And you know, I mean, it was funny, but it was the irony was very present and glaring. And I thought, you know, this is a wonderful challenge. It's an opportunity for me to walk through this with the people who listen.
Exactly. Katie, we got to step aside. I'll let you finish that thought when we come back. Stay tuned, everybody.
For this week's Ranger Gear Review, we are literally giving away folding credit card knives for one penny each. This is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and to take advantage of this offer, just go to freefoldingknife.com. That's freefoldingknife.com, and you'll get this folding credit card knife for just one penny. This isn't some gimmick. This is a real emergency use folding credit card knife with a steel blade, very, very sharp, 65 millimeters in length on the blade, but it folds down like origami to the shape and size of a credit card. This makes it incredibly easy to carry in a pocket or a purse or the glove box of your car and have it ready for emergency use. Normally these are sold for anywhere from $5 to $10, but right now at freefoldingknife.com you can get one of these origami style folding credit card knives for just a penny. Limit one per order, please. So take advantage of it right now at freefoldingknife.com.
Yeah, like I said, one of my favorite products. Once you get it, you're going to waste a lot of time, I'm warning you. Rangergear.com, that's where you go to order that. And I want to thank our sponsors here for the third hour, Steve Quayle of Renaissance Precious Metals, who is also going to step forward and help Katie. And, of course, our friend Doug Hagman had Katie on last week, and I mentioned Katie as well when I was on Doug's show. So Katie is getting a lot of support. She's going to need more. I also want to thank Mike Adams from RangerGear.com for sponsoring this third hour, as well as Bob Griswold. And you heard me talk about Bob earlier in the show. If you need something for survival, Bob is your go-to guy. And, of course, if you need to put your money somewhere where it's going to be worth something, Steve is your guy. They're great men. They're great patriots. And this is why I have them as sponsors on our show. And all of them in their own way, I know, are going to step up and help Katie. Katie, I want to read some numbers here for a second here because this is very applicable. Not just a minute. I got away from myself here. You can contact Steve, and I just want to make sure I give this out. So I'm doing my due diligence and showing proper respect to our wonderful sponsors. Steve Quayle, 406-586-4842. Renaissance Precious Metals, and of course Bob Griswold, 1-800-627-3809, and he's got one of the most entertaining websites, as does Steve, one of the largest in the world. But readymaderesources.com is Bob Griswold's site, and like I said, everything you need for survival, there it is. Here's some numbers I want to read, Katie. 100, 125, 50, 100, 25, 10, 25, 200, and 100. Now, these are so far on the GoFundMe page that Katie has had opened for her by her friend Jennifer. Jennifer has opened this page, and I'm going to add to it later. You can find the GoFundMe page at thecommonsenseshow.com, and I reposted it. It's up there now as the number one link on the website. And, of course, when we transfer to our new website, we will maintain this as well. But we've had 27 donations to date, and we are up to $1,785. So thank you very much.
Yes.
Katie estimates that she needs about $25,000 to complete this natural treatment. And I would ask that you would join in. Katie, my wife is sending you something tomorrow, and of course the amount better be kept secret. I'll be really upset with you if you let that out.
I will.
But folks, you don't need $100. You don't need $25. This is a chance for us to come together as a community here with a Common Sense Show where we love America, we love God, and we're working to restore both of those principles. You know, we need Katie on the show, but you know, more than the show needing Katie, the world needs someone like Katie who gives of herself selflessly to people in need. And so no gift is too small. God bestows upon us blessings in different amounts. And no one is asking that you break your bank or give away your kids' lunch money. I would never ask anyone to give to a cause, no matter how noble, how important it is. But give what you can. And you can go up to thecommonsenseshow.com, and you'll see the link there, the GoFundMe link. And Jennifer has written a beautiful testimonial. I have one line there at the beginning. I said, help me help Katie. Mm-hmm. And I would like all of you to please give something. I don't care if it's a dollar. But let's pledge support. Because, see, there's something I believe in, Katie, and let me share this with the listening audience. And I know we kind of come from the same mindset. There are spiritual forces in the world that... And I'm saying this as someone who prides himself on being a researcher and a scientist, but what we have in the world spiritually defies science. It defies the scientific method, correlation measures. What we have is an unseen but the most powerful force in the world. And when we come together and give, and I mean if it's just a dollar, $5, $100, $1,000, it all springs from the same act of godly giving. And it invokes the spirit, a unified spirit among all of us that can be used for good. In this case, the spirit can help Katie heal. Katie, I'm going to just quickly give a testimony where this spirit helped me. My son was born 2 months premature. He weighed 2 pounds, 3 ounces. You'd look at him today and he looks like any other healthy 15-year-old kid who plays sports and goes to school. And has this personal interest. You wouldn't know he was preemie, but I was scared to death. And plus, my wife had terrible complications. She was in the hospital 2 months prior and 2 months after. very serious, how she downplays it, but you don't spend that kind of time in today's hospitals without a problem. But my church had a prayer chain for her, and the people I worked with were so wonderful. They organized prayer chains without even telling me. And what I can tell all of you is my son turned out normal against all odds. This works. This stuff works, and it can help Katie. And I'm asking you from the bottom of my heart to please not only give what you can financially, but lend of yourself spiritually to help Katie in this time of need.
Thank you, Dave. And I completely agree with you, and I'm glad to hear everything worked out. I did not know that about your son, but I firmly believe in the power, I mean power, of prayer. We don't understand it. We don't have to understand it. All we need to know is that it works, and it creates, it elevates. It elevates us. It elevates the people we're praying for. It elevates our world. And so, yes, I completely invite as much prayer as I possibly can. And I'm telling you, Dave, my attitude is good. Like I said, I have good days and bad days, and this is squeezing me. God is crushing me. I feel like the potter's clay, and I'm excited to see what's going to come of this, but it is changing me spiritually, mentally, physically. And I want people to be of good cheer, and I want people to follow along with this, because everything that I'm learning, I am going to share. I don't want it to be the Katie hour every show, but I want to share. I want to share things I'm learning and encourage people, because everyone listening, I would guess everyone out there listening has something they're dealing with, and whether it's cancer or whatever it is, we all have our thorn, our trials to bear, and the thorn in our side. So no one's impervious from these things, but it's attitude, it's spirit, it's our relationship with God, it's family, it's friends, and it's a combination. It's the whole package. That's where modern medicine goes after the disease. So they poison it, chop it, kill it, whatever they're going to do to it. And that's their approach. My approach is, okay, if there's a portion of that that's necessary for diagnosis or whatever, but there's so much more to this. We are spiritual beings. We are mental beings, physical beings. We are a complete picture. And that's the way I'm going to approach this, is with as much balance as I can. And so much of what I'm doing, as Dave was saying, is not covered by insurance. And that's going to be part of my journey, too, is finding out why these things aren't covered. Why is it? I have a pretty good idea why they're not covered. But I want to start challenging the system in a way, or challenging people's thoughts in terms of how they approach their doctors, or maybe their insurance companies, or even their state legislators. Why aren't these things covered? They should be. And so a lot of the things that I'm going to be doing are a little bit more expensive than my insurance. I do have insurance, but that my insurance will cover. So that is the journey I'm on. It's kind of a nutshell journey, but I do want to take people along with me. And oh my goodness, I've been getting emails from people giving me protocols and ideas, and that is the amazing thing I'm getting from this, Dave. I know we don't have a lot of time here, but what I'm getting reinforces everything I've been doing for the last year. I'm getting emails back from people saying, go to this website, go to this website. I had a sister-in-law who had cancer, and she did this naturally, and she did that. Check out this fruit or this vitamin. And that encourages me, because that's what I've been trying to encourage people to do over the last year, and now it's coming back to me, and that's the cycle that you're talking about. It, what goes around comes around. And, this is exciting to me. So,
Like I said, it's going to be your finest hour in terms of what it's going to mean to our listeners down the road.
Uh-huh.
Now, again, the GoFundMe is embedded in an article on the Common Sense Show. It says, CSS health reporter Katie Whalen, health crisis, need your help. And so you can log on to there and click on, and you'll see the appropriate place to click where you can read about Katie. And then also you can make your donation. So, Katie, we're just about out of time, so let me pass along some news. Our first hour guest, Paul Preston, just texted me, and he said his listeners in California did not hear the second half of the Shauna Cox interview.
Well, isn't that interesting?
But I'm sure that Global Star Radio Network, as skilled as they are, they're going to have the complete archive, and guess what, boys and girls from the FBI, this is going to go far and wide. Mm-hmm. We are going to get this message out. I took notes as I was interviewing Shauna. You notice I just let her talk, let her tell the story, and I've already written a narrative today about what I already knew, and I'm going to fill in the gaps, and that's going to go out. Even if we don't have the show, they're not going to stop this story.
Right.
And Katie, they're not going to stop your story either. Let's talk about next week. We will provide a weekly update here about Katie's progress. And like I said, it'll be short and brief. She said that she still wants to do the Hell Show segments, which she will. But we'll update you on where we are with the fundraising and what we need. And we're going to circulate this to our friends in the media. And I'm sure that we're going to reach our goal. So next week, we have a very special guest. Very special. Mm. Drum roll, please. Here we go.
Drum roll.
There's the drum roll.
Ready?
John B. Wells from Caravan to Midnight.
Oh, woohoo.
I am so looking forward to it. It's been too long. I haven't talked to John since on the air since July. We spoke a couple weeks ago, I guess it was, and I worked with Diane as special assistant, and we got this date set up, and we're going to talk about, we have a whole lot to talk about. As Steve said, we're living in the times that we've been writing about, and we're going to be talking about those times with John B. Wells. And you mentioned the Hagmans, and I wanted to throw this out, too. We're going to be interviewing Joe Hagman in a few weeks, actually in about a month, on March 6th. The younger generation will someday take the place of people like Doug Hagman and I, Steve Quayle, Katie, and
Joe
Hagman.
Don't you mention me. Don't you dare mention me.
Okay. All right. I didn't mean to mention the ageless princess. I'm sorry. But Joe Hagman represents the best part, I think, of the new generation of people that are going to carry on the fight for liberty, because Thomas Jefferson said you got to have that revolution every 20 years. And Joe Hagman will keep that alive. And we have him on for a full 2 hours. And, man, is he knowledgeable. What an intelligent young man he is. And I'm so pleased we have people like Joe in the movement. And we're blessed by the Hagmans in general. But I feel better knowing that we have someone like Joe Hagman to fight for our kids when we're gone. Mm-hmm. So,
and, Dave, just can I say one thing real quick? This audience is amazing.
Yes.
And I don't ever want to let you down. I want to stay with you and work with you. But you people are such a blessing, and that's what I will close tonight out with. Thank you, and God bless you all.
I echo that. It's hard to believe with all the great people we know, both from listeners and both from my colleagues in the independent media. It's hard to believe we're getting our butts handed to us and we're losing. And it's halftime when we're down by 20. But we shall rally.
Mm-hmm.
We shall rally as God is our witness. Anyway, Katie, we're out of time. Thank you for sharing. Thanks to Paul Preston, Daniel Brigman, and, of course, Shauna Cox. Go out and have a great week, everybody. God bless.